You're listening to the Mythgream Podcast with your hosts, Oren Ashkenazi, Wes Matlock, and Chris Winkle. There was a castle by a waterfall with a pink and purple wall and a princess living there. She had no parents and was all alone. She got by on her own and she liked it pretty well. Cause she never wore socks. She had a pet snake. She bought a red guitar and she ate a whole cake. And there wasn't anybody there to tell her what to do. So she did what she wanted to. Everybody knew the story of the princess who saved herself.
This episode was produced thanks to our patron, Kathy Ferguson, professor of political theory in Star Trek.
This is the Mythgreen Podcast. I'm Chris, and with me is...
Oren.
And... our special... returning guest.
Yep. I'm still here. I've already done this joke, so I'm not going to do it again, but yes, I'm still here.
So today we are going to talk about TV shows that are fantasy and not in our own world.
Basically,
they're not like a contemporary urban fantasy. They actually have either in another world or historical setting where they've got costumes and are actually live action. And it's a very small subset because they are surprisingly rare.
Yeah, there aren't a lot of them, and they're mostly bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're mostly just awful. And I'm interested to know why.
Yeah. So it's definitely worth talking about because, especially in comparison, if you look at books and the amount of fantasy books that fit in these subgenres of fantasy, like, you would think there would be so much more live-action shows mm-hmm. representing them, and there isn't, and what's there just isn't, in general, isn't good.
Right, and there are more on the horizon. I'm guessing we're going to get more in the next few years as people realize that even fantasy is now mainstream, but it's going to take a little while.
There is the upcoming most expensive TV show ever made, Lord of the Rings.
Oh, God.
By, I think, Amazon?
Yeah, Amazon. They paid, like, over $200 million for just the rights.
Yes.
Just the rights to make it.
Yes, the show's budget is going to be massive, much larger than Game of Thrones. They're throwing... just money at it. Like, Amazon just hand over fist. They just want to make this show, even if it's not good, I think they want to show that they are willing to drop the cash.
Yeah, well, I mean, if we think about it, Game of Thrones is the obvious exception to the they are bad rule, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Game of Thrones is one of those shows where people sign up for HBO just to watch Game of Thrones. Like, it is that big. And so naturally, other people are now copying it. And I'm
right.
sure that Amazon, with their own streaming service and the big... bloody battle between streaming services that is starting to go down now, Amazon really wants a big iconic show to draw people to their service. Real bad.
Right.
Real bad. And that's almost certainly what's happening.
If CBS All Access can do it with a middle-of-the-road Star Trek show, I'm sure Amazon will be able to succeed with the only Lord of the Rings show.
I mean, I do just want to say that, and I could be wrong, but I don't think a streaming service can survive with just one show that people want to watch.
Well, especially because Amazon... maybe I'm wrong about this. Maybe someone knows something that I don't. But last time I checked, Amazon doesn't actually have a streaming service the same way Netflix or Hulu does. Everything and almost everything on Amazon is you buy separately, right? There are some exceptions. There are a few shows that you get free for having Prime, but like that's like a side benefit of Prime, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not how they advertise it. So unless they're changing their model, which maybe they are, I'm pretty sure this is just going to be a show that you have to buy separately, like all their other shows.
I haven't heard anything about this, but my bet is they're going to either expand Amazon Prime Video into a entire streaming service or introduce some sort of additional paid service.
Yeah, they do have a lot of add-on subscriptions in addition to Prime, so maybe they're mm-hmm. going to make this, you know, one separate from video. In any case, I don't think Amazon has a reputation for having good shows.
Mm-hmm,
and so having one huge iconic thing that actually works out could change that. And knowing Amazon and how aggressive they are in the business growth department, I suspect that it can't that much budget can't be just for this one show. It has to somehow make a greater impact on Amazon's mm-hmm. bottom line for them to want to do it. Surprisingly, though, I feel like after Game of Thrones, there's a lot more shows that instead of being a other world fantasy like Game of Thrones were historical. Like, we've gotten
mm-hmm.
There's one show that's like historical about like Queen Mary, and there's like
yeah.
a Viking show on the History Channel that's really popular now, but they took out the fantasy element. They're just historical, but they're about,
you know, the rulership, the fight for to rule and other. Right.
Okay, so I have a theory, or this is a hypothesis, really. I have no way to test it, but this is my hypothesis on why there are fewer, like, Second World fantasy shows and why they tend to be bad. At first, I thought it was a budget thing. I thought it was like, well, Second World fantasy is expensive, and so they're not going to get made very often, and when they do, they'll probably spend all their money on, like, the costumes and sets and not have a lot left over to hire good writers and director and what have you. But then I thought about it, and I was like, you know, space opera is just as expensive, and there's a lot more good space opera out there, or just space shows in general, Star Trek, the Battlestar Galactica, The Expanse, etc. And so what I've actually, my current hypothesis is just that people don't take fantasy seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, like, you know, people hear fantasy and they're like, oh, magic elves and fairies. Why does that need to be good? You know, those things are not real, and it's not like sci-fi where it's like imagining the future or whatever. It's all like, you know, it's all make-believe kid stuff. And I think that my hypothesis is that that mentality still pervades even in the post-Lord of the Ring era,
mm-hmm.
right? That's my hypothesis. And I think Game of Thrones partially got around that by appearing more mature by having lots of sex and violence. That's like one of Game of Thrones' big claim to fame. It's like, we're for adults.
Yeah.
Look at this nudity and this decapitation.
I think going off of kind of what you said, how they're doing a lot of historical and they're taking out the fantasy elements, I think they're looking at how popular Game of Thrones got when it was pretty much no magic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's when, like, the boom of Game of Thrones is obviously the first season, and there's almost nothing in there that is magic. Like, Daenerys and her dragons is pretty much it, but that's very small. So you could just do the grim, bloody, medieval-ish fighting with people in costumes, people with swords and armor, and boats, if you're Vikings.
Everyone loves boats.
And so, like, I think really what they saw is that people, like, grim, dark people in sort with plate mail and shields and stuff hitting each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then lots of people being betrayed and politics and all that noise.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that there is definitely an element where it's surprising to find out that fantasy is more popular than science fiction, because science fiction, for some reason, is just more prestigious.
Mm-hmm.
It's considered kind of more elite. You know, there's, you know, more intellectual, and fantasy is considered more lowbrow. And so certainly that is probably contributing. I still find the budget argument more compelling, because I'm not convinced that a space opera TV show costs as much as a medieval fantasy TV show.
Mm.
Because first of all, like, okay, so you have a bunch of people in a ship. You need a ship set.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a bunch of kind of already established special effects for showing ships. And you have a ship model, and the ship doesn't, like, move around like a dragon. You know, it doesn't, like, flap its wings. It just, you know, it stays exactly the same shape, you know, in its, like, space environment.
Well, I mean, Voyager, the nacelles go up and down, so that's not exactly the same shape.
But pretty similar. I don't think that, like, if you were to take a dragon and compare it to a spaceship, I feel like the dragon is much, much taller order in special effects wise. I also suspect that the costuming and sets are much more intense, because a sci-fi just has more of a modern look, you know, and especially if you have a crew that all, you know, limited crew, so you're seeing the same people over again, they all have one set of costume that you make in the beginning, as opposed mm-hmm. to something like Xena, mm-hmm. where Xena is hilarious in the low budget production value, where, you know, they're traveling around and, like, you have all of these background NPCs. They all have to have historical costumes. You need, you know, all of these historical, like, tools and implements that people are using. And it feels like that would take a lot more effort, you know. And then on top of that, the special effects for magic, mm-hmm. which I feel like are much less. Again, even, you know, even phaser beast, like, we do the same favor, you know, phaser beam over and over again. I don't know, I just think that a lot of the fantasy stuff requires a lot more changes and flexibility.
You could be right.
I think it actually could be a little bit of both of those things. It's that fantasy does have some of these things, especially like big fantasy fights are lots of people who need some sort of decent fight choreography to look good, right? Like even Game of Thrones, its big fight scenes aren't more than like 100 people.
Mm-hmm.
Even though in the books they're like thousands of people, because that would be massive budget. But to go off of what you said, Oren, fantasy has a much higher bar to jump to be considered serious. I think that is true in a lot of ways. So, like, not only is a lot of their stuff more expensive, but there's no established okay shortcuts yet for fantasy. Like, bad CGI is par for the course in a lot of sci-fi. Even, like, I mean, Doctor Who's known for it, and that show is still really popular. The Orville's CGI is eh.
Yeah, not great.
But, like, people are accepting of that, but no one wants to see crappy-looking, like, goofy-looking magic anymore. No one wants to see, like, a garbage-looking CGI dragon fly through the air. So, sci-fi is allowed to... Not only, I think, does it need to have a little bit lower bar jump to be considered serious, it also... There's a lot of things that the audience has accepted will not necessarily look good, and that's okay.
Yeah, I also... Even though I'm a firm proponent of the belief that when you are adapting something, you can make a good story of just about anything, I do think that source material matters, and, like, most fantasy TV shows are adaptations, right? Like, especially the more that are being planned, and whereas a lot of sci-fi shows are if not original, at least are not based off of fantasy books, right? And a lot of the material, a lot of popular fantasy novels are frankly just not very good. You know, like, if you look at the two that I can think of off the top of my head, there's Legend of the Seeker, which is based off of Sword of Truth. And then there's Chronicles of Shannara, which is based off of Sword of Shannara, right? And, like, Sword of Truth is, like, a weird, like, objectivist fantasy of the author that the author is having, where he's fantasizing about being an objectivist hero. And then the Chronicles of Shannara, or the Sword of Shannara, is like a low budget Lord of the Rings remake with, like, a, you know, with a post apocalyptic tint in the background.
Certainly. I do think that I'm not convinced that, like, all of these fantasy novels are particularly bad necessarily, but I will say that we go back to the production, like, you know. Fantasy novels, all of these big castles. It's like, are you gonna try to go somewhere in the world that has lots of big castles and constantly film castles? And so that adds another constraint.
Also, Game of Thrones has kind of, like, set a bar, and that bar is massive world, tons of characters, like, traveling everywhere, on location shots. Lord of the Rings did this too in the movies. It's like everything's on location, and whereas Star Wars or Star Trek and stuff, like, just shoot it on a soundstage.
I will say I think Sword of Shannara had the material necessary to make a good show. It really looks like they spent all of their money on making it the world look good.
It is, you very know? Pretty.
Like, the world is really pretty. That's a huge value get from it, but there's the rest of it just feels off, and it's hard to tell how much of it is the writing and how much is the acting and how much is the directing. It's just, it feels not great. And really rough, and it feels like they just didn't leave enough budget left over for those portions.
Right. I mean, part of the problem with Shannara is that the story is about, like, the world ending, right? Like, it's really high stakes stuff. Like, the great demon is going to rise and destroy the world, but, like, we don't actually see that much of the world. It's very, as far as I can tell, in the world, the world of Shannara takes place in, almost entirely in an elven castle and, like, some villages. There's not really much of a connection with this world that they're saving, so, like, the high stakes are, like, well, whatevs. Especially since, like, in theory, like, the place where we spend the most time and get the most development is with the elves, who are not particularly nice. They're kind of jerks. And, like, it's like, I wouldn't be honestly that sad if this castle got eaten. Like, the elf that I liked the most was the guard captain, and spoilers, she dies. So, like, whatever.
Whereas I think of... So, it is worth talking about Merlin, because I don't think that Merlin had a good excuse for being such a terrible show.
No.
Like, it had... I mean, first of all, it had really good actors, you know, and the characters were actually quite good, and the characters were definitely the reason to watch the show. But the plotting was just so bad. I'm not sure I've ever watched a show that had, like, such bad plotting, at least in comparison to the other aspects of the show. Like, we have this really good, you know, unfortunately queerbaiting, you know, dynamic between Merlin and Arthur that works out really well and really carries the show. But they just cannot come up with plots for the life of them.
Yeah, my suspicion with that, with what happened with Merlin is that, and I don't think this is particular to fantasy, but like a lot of shows generally have some sort of shtick that they, that like this is what they do, this is their premise, or like just their style of make of how the show works, like what the writers are most interested in. And sometimes it's a good one, sometimes it's not. And in Merlin, I think it was just a bad one, which is just that, like, they really, really liked Merlin having to do magic in secret.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And a lot of the show's problems can be traced to making really weird plot decisions so that Merlin can continue to have to do magic in secret. Because that was what they wanted to do, and they just, like, didn't know how to make it work properly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it goes down to, unfortunately, there are a lot of writers that, we've been seeing a lot of morally gray stories lately, and Merlin is dark. Mm-hmm. And it was intended to be dark. It was intended to be kind of like a dark self-fulfilling prophecy. And it's really cool that the writers wanted to go to that place. They wanted to have like a tragic ending for the show, and they did. And, but at the same time, you know, trying to find balance and having this King Uther who is really a terrible person, but yet has to stay on the throne somehow, so that they have to continue interacting with him instead of just like, okay, Uther, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, and the thing is that Uther bans magic, and that's why Merlin has to keep magic a secret. And it's true, that whole dynamic is just, is not working. And I'm not going to say that there was no way to make Merlin keep his magic a secret, but that was definitely, what they did was definitely not the right way to go about it.
I do. There's at least one show that I think fits the second world setup, but mm-hmm. Avatar, like The Last Airbender, is like fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's got the magic. It's got like, you know, all this fanciful elements, and it works great.
It seems to be better for animated shows.
Mm-hmm.
Also, like, I'm sure if we look outside the U.S. and towards like Japan and stuff like that, I'm sure there's a ton of actually good fantasy-esque shows that just this Western United States style that Game of Thrones popularized.
Or I know you've seen some Japanese live-action fantasy recently.
It was actually Chinese, and it was called Chinese? Ice Fantasy, and God, it was bad. It was so bad, and like, I cannot swear that this is not some kind of, like, cultural context that I'm missing. Maybe a Chinese audience would have thought it was great. I don't know. But I watched it, and it was really bad. Like, The only thing that made it worth watching was just how wonderfully flamboyant all of the costumes were. Mm-hmm. Like, the costumes are just so over-the-top pretty.
It looks really nice.
Yeah, and, like, the elf, and it's like they were watching Lord of the Rings and were like, look at this pretty Legolas elf guy. What if everyone was like that, but, like, times 100 is basically the premise.
I do think part of the reason for that is a lot of countries like, you know, India and China and stuff have gotten into the movie making business significantly after the U.S. did.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of going through a lot of the phases the U.S. movie business already did. And so, like, I think we will, it's not obviously a perfect parallel, but I do think we'll see that those evolve over time as audiences' tastes change the way the U.S. has did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's also super random, like, what makes it to the U.S. viewing market from India or China. Like, the exchange with Japan has gotten more open over the last couple decades, to the point that, like, if something comes out in Japan, it's usually pretty easy to watch it here now.
Fun fact, it's not super related to this topic, but I just wanted to share it with people who didn't know. One of the top grossing movies this year was a movie exclusively come out in China called Wolf Warrior 2. So if anyone wants to go check it out, one of the top grossing movies, it was, like, on the top 10 for, like, many, many weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it was, like, the only movie China was showing in their theaters. It's really funny.
Is Wolf Warrior 2.
I don't know what Wolf Warrior 1 is. I don't know how well it did, but apparently Wolf Warrior 2. It's where it's at.
Just where. All right, well, I'll put that in the show notes.
But yeah, going back to the difference between animated and live action again, I mean, I think both of our theories about budget and being taken seriously, you know, kind of correlate with the fact that animated TV shows, fantasy TV shows, as far as I can tell, don't have any issues. They're not especially bad. As far as I know, they're not particularly scarce.
Well, okay, so I've looked at some of them, and, like, I do think it's worth noting that of the ones that I've seen, Avatar stands out for being really good. There's, like, Avatar and Attack on Titan, like, one, you know, which is Japanese, but, like, the other ones that I've seen are various shades of not good. Like, Avatar and Attack on Titan really stand out in terms of quality, so I think it might just be that those are the ones we've seen, and so we like kind of associate. They've given us a false impression of how good the animated Second World Fantasy scene is.
Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe. I would say. And also, how big a net are you casting?
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, I would consider Friendship as Magic. If Friendship is Magic, that...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. My Little Ponies mm-hmm. to also fall in this category. Adventure Time?
Yeah, that's true.
So...
I've always felt Adventure Time was kind of overrated, but that's my own beef. That's my own hill to die
I'm
on.
I'm with you on that hill.
All right, join me on the hill.
But, I mean, I would say... my impression is that animated shows do not have the same issue. And,
yeah.
First of all, they don't... take especially higher budget than pretty much any other animated show, right? Because it's all animated. They don't have to worry about special effects. But also, they are usually targeted at kids. You know, anime, maybe not anime, but that means that I feel like the not taking it seriously just doesn't really apply when people are making shows for kids.
That's true.
They don't care what's serious. They care about what kids like. And if it's for kids, all the better, right? There's definitely a perception that, like, fantasies for children out there, and so
I think that does cause some problems for this Western live action fantasy that is trying to become a thing, and Game of Thrones pushed it a long way. I could see Lord of the Rings show pushing it like more fully into the mainstream.
I'm very curious about this Lord of the Rings show now.
I think it'll be okay, but I think a lot of people are gonna watch it no matter what, so
I mean at this point really the question is it good enough? I have a hard time imagining it will please the jaded critics like ourselves, because it's very questionable what they would even do in the time frame they claim that it's being set in, because their hands are really tied as far as like changes they can actually make to the world, since we all know what happens in the movies, right?
So is it like in the Silmarillion early days?
No, last time I checked, it was between it was set between The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings.
Oh, that's
very
odd. That's a very bad idea.
Yeah, that didn't sound good. Now, granted, this was early production info stuff, right? So they may have gotten it wrong, or they might have just changed their minds. But
that's a very odd.
I mean, is it between those two movies, but on a different continent? Probably not.
I'm surprised the Silmarillion is like such a it's such an unfleshed out thing that you could pretty much do whatever you wanted. It's like told in like old, like similar to like Celtic legends and stuff like that, where it's just kind of a list of events that happened to a person. It's so that just seems like a place that you could, it's very fertile ground for new stories, because you're like, while these guys were off doing their super heroics that pushed us towards Lord of the Rings, this was happening.
And people like Middle Earth. I think that just having a story set in Middle Earth would be a pretty good draw. But again, if they're throwing that much money at it, and they clearly want it to like attract attention to their service and their content, maybe they just really want the same characters.
I mean, I think there's a reason why people keep wanting to reboot Star Trek, or why the Abrams reboot was with the original series characters, and why so many pitches before that were for basically the same idea. I think that there's at least among some producers of entertainment, there is a feeling that as long as you put characters people know, they will come to watch it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that making a show in Lord of the Rings without Aragorn and Legolas would be a huge risk.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know that for a fact that that's what they're doing, right? I don't know that we're going to get the young adventures of Legolas. I'm hoping not.
Yeah.
I am a doom prophet who hopes that my prediction is wrong.
maybe they'll join up with it'll be a linked tie-in show with Shadows of Mordor.
Yeah.
So that's also set in the time between Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. So we can see Talion and Kellogg Booberry, his ghost friend.
What?
Those the video games. The Shadow of Mordor.
I know, but did you say Kellogg Booberry?
His name is Kella Brimbor, but I prefer it to be changed to Kellogg Booberry, because he's your ghost friend that, you know, is Grumpy Elfman. So I'm hoping we'll see that in the show.
But will the show have loot boxes? That's the question.
Yeah, there will actually be a box on the ground, and then when they open it, an orc army will spew out, and they'll have, like, five legendary orcs in it, and then they'll know they're in trouble. That's what I anticipate.
That's terrible. But I don't think Amazon has any investment in video games, thankfully.
Yeah, hopefully not. Yeah. There's still a lot of questions over Amazon's Lord of the Rings, right? Mm-hmm. At this point, I'm still Like, I'm hoping that the initial reports were wrong, but we'll see. I do think it might be worth talking a little bit more about Legend of the Seeker.
It's so bad. It is so laughably bad. Like, if but you want to laugh,
it's fun.
Watch
bad.
Legend of how the do, Seeker.
I do wonder, how do so many of these shows turn into fun bad? Like, so many shows, there's just so many shows that are just unenjoyable to watch. But, like, Xena, Hercules.
Xena is actually, I think, fun bad. Especially since you have the gender subversion, which adds novelty.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, those are fun bad, right? Like, there are lots of just depressing bad shows, but, like, this fantasy has a lot of fun bad shows.
Yeah. Well, I mean, bad special effects are pretty comical, right?
Right. I mean, helps. I also can't help but wonder if maybe it has, like, so, like, with Xena, one of the things that makes Xena, like, it takes it a little bit above fun bad for me is that even though it's a really silly world that doesn't make any sense unless you imagine it as a, like, plot to destroy the agrarian way of life, you know, read my fan fiction, but despite that, like, the actors of Xena and Gabrielle, I know Xena's actor's name is Lucy Lawless, I don't know the actress who plays Gabrielle, but they are taking it really seriously, right? Like, they are very earnest in their portrayals, and they are, like, interesting, and so, I enjoy watching them, like, legitimately, and the rest of the world is just hilarious and silly, right? Whereas, like, I'm kind of bored by Hercules, like, it's just not that interesting to me, but, like, I find Xena fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, Xena has, I don't know what Hercules' backstory is, but Xena does have the whole dark backstory thing going. But anyway, Legend of the Seeker, the thing about this show is, I'm not even sure it's any of the fantasy elements. I just remember laughing really hard at the fight scene and the way it was filmed. And it was like any other, you know, hand-to-hand, like, fight scene that you could have in any show. But the way they filmed it was just so over the top in trying to glamorize it. That it was just hilarious, and there was not anything particular to the genre. It just was that way.
I do like what that earnest delivery that can really take a show that even if it's utterly ridiculous, it can make it funny because it looks like the characters are really in it and the actors are trying. I think that's in Legend of the Seeker that award goes to Zed Zoris Zorander, or Zzz, as his business card says. That actor is, not only is, I think, his performance the best on that show, but he is trying so hard in every episode to be a serious Gandalf-like wizard man, when all this utterly ridiculous stuff is happening around him, and it's just like, I feel for you, man.
Yeah, the source material for Legend of the Seeker is definitely not helping. One of the things that I can't help think about is, like, Richard.
Richard.
Because the book... Just the beginning of the book, I did a kind of a critique of the first chapter of Sword of Truth. And the book, it just sounds like a, like, whiny, resentful younger sibling. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you know, Richard didn't like this, and Richard didn't do that. It's just, like, complaining about Richard, the main character's, like, older brother, right? And then when he shows up in the show, it's just like, oh, there we go, Richard.
Dang it, Richard. I hate you.
Okay, but, like, so, I do think that the problem with Legend of the Seeker, many problems, are kind of symptomatic of the show not really, you know, where the problem with Merlin was that the writers had a thing they liked, that was their vision, their goal, was the story about Merlin having to do magic in secret, and they were not willing to change or compromise that, even when it really was hurting the show. I feel like Legend of the Seeker is the opposite. It feels like a show that has no vision. And I can understand why that would happen, because you get some people who are like, we're going to adapt this cool fantasy story for TV, and they read it, and it's like, that was really disturbing. There's a lot of bad things in here. What are we doing with this?
Let me tell you about the two episodes dedicated to torture.
Yeah, it's like,
oh, jeez.
The book takes a sharp veer into Torture Town.
So wait, did they put that in the show?
I don't, I didn't watch the show long enough. It might not have even gotten to that point.
I mean,
that's near the end of the
I mean, I remember the torture ladies are in it, but I don't think that it goes into, like, the deep torture porn of the book.
That was actually, funnily enough, that was the only part that really interested me in that book, because it seemed like at least the author was excited to be writing about it. Everything else was very bland.
But, like, when you're trying to adapt something and the vision of the original work you were adapting is just unpalatable, right? It's just not something you can put on TV. and, you know, for good reasons. And you're like, okay, so what's our idea? And so what you end up with is a problem of the week show? Because that's what Legend of the Seeker is, right? And they have, like, some really bizarre episodes. Like, the first episode starts pretty much the way the book starts, with, like, the warlord rising and the lady showing up to be like, Richard, you are the... No, not Richard. Richard is the older brother.
I think so. Or maybe. Unless I just totally got them both wrong.
I think Richard is actually the main character.
Oops.
Oh, well.
Some guy.
Whatever. You know, you're the chosen one. Here's a magic sword. Good job. So, and, like, that happens basically exactly the same as it happens in the book. But then after that, they go into, like, some... like, just weird, you know, here, we found a random problem. It's actually kind of similar to Xena. It's like they're just wandering around, and they run into, like, weird issues. And the weirdest one is probably when they run into the town that is trying to turn magic into a drugs metaphor. Oh, and, yeah. Like, magic is bad if you are using it, but you're not born with it. You need to be born with magic. Being born with magic is great, but, like, using it... trying to use magic if you're not born with it is drugs and bad.
You need to be born with the cocaine in your veins. Otherwise, it's not good for you.
Yeah.
You do raise a good point, and it really confuses me why Legend of the Seeker wasn't Wheel of Time. Like, why didn't they make a show out of Wheel of Time? Because for a lot of people, Wheel of Time is significantly more palatable. Its problems are easier to write out in a lot of cases. Like, you can just not have the domestic abuse plot line. And, like, you could... a lot of people are more accepting of the crappy magic system, where you could just change it. I mean, the overall plot...
You could get less into the weeds about how, like, the magic is very different based on gender, and how, like, man magic is stronger than woman magic.
You could pretty much just, like, hand wave it and be like, if people want to believe that's going on in the background, they can, but we're just not going to show it.
Yeah.
So they have to, like, apply it themselves.
It just seems out of, like, somewhat popular kind of generic fantasy. It feels like one of the, like... Legend or Sword of Truth goes way off the rails way fast, whereas the Wheel of Time is a much more slow burn that you could gloss over in a TV show.
Yeah, so there's actually a funny story about that. So some company does hold the rights to, or at least did for a while, hold the rights to a Wheel of Time TV show, and they never did anything with them except for one time when they made like what is highly rated as television's worst pilot. Like, as bad as that crappy Wonder Woman pilot.
I was just thinking, like, I've seen that Wonder Woman pilot.
Yeah, it's apparently up there.
Oh.
And, like, made it not because they wanted to make a show about it, but because it was, like, required in their contract that they do something with it to keep the rights. And, like, they aired it at, like, midnight, so no one would watch it. And it was so bad that, like, it was... And I think now that someone is working on an actual TV show last time.
I feel like somebody should bring them to court for that.
You know, I actually... I heard that they were getting sued over that. That it was, like, so bad that they were being sued for bad faith.
Yeah,
this is clearly not actually following the contract.
I will look and see if that's true. Because I can't confirm it off the top of my head. I will put in the show notes if it's true or not.
Yeah, none of us are very not lawyers. So it's hard to know. But that's very odd. It seems like that would be a great cash source to have a Wheel of Time TV show. It's a very popular series.
You would think. But for now, we are out of time, and so we must end the discussion on that note. Those of you at home, if anything we said piqued your interest, you can email us at podcast@mythgreens.com. Otherwise, we will talk to you next week.
If you enjoyed this episode, consider leaving us a review on iTunes so we can continue to grow like a swarm of nanites. There was a dragon with a pointy tail. He was bigger than a whale, and his breath was terrible. He scared the princess when he came around. Tried to burn the castle down, but she caught him by his tail. Then she tied him to a tree so the dragon couldn't fly. She told him he was mean, and it made the dragon cry. When he finally apologized, she offered him some tea. He accepted it graciously. Now he visits every weekend with the princess.
This has been the Mythgreant Podcast, opening closing theme, The Princess Who Saved Herself, by Jonathan Colton.